Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi there, and welcome again to the Explaining History podcast. And in this podcast, I want to talk about the Central Powers' thinking and their strategic planning in the final year of the war, from the Russian Revolution, the October Revolution of late 1917, and the opportunities that provided Germany, Austria, and the Ottoman Empire, all the way through to the failure of the German army in late 1918. So, to recap, the Russian Revolution of February 1917, which brought in the provisional government, overthrew the Tsarist regime, and brought about the very beginnings of some kind of changes to Russian civil rights and to the freedoms enjoyed by Russians, but very little else. There is very little economic or social change, and of course no change in the policy of the war and how that was being prosecuted. And as a result, support for the provisional government evaporates throughout the year 1917. In October 1917, the Bolsheviks seize power and quickly conclude a peace treaty with the Central Powers, and then proceed in early 1918 to sign the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk, removing Russia from the war and gifting vast new resources to Germany. And it's at this moment that Germany sensed that success is in sight. Now, I'm currently reading The Vanquished by Robert Gerwaith. It's an excellent book and a really interesting dissection of the period 1917 to 23. And his thesis is, of course, that the war that we are aware of, the First World War, that we popularly think of as a struggle between Britain and France on one side and Germany on the other, joined later by America on the Western Front, that ends in 1918, in November 1918, but very little else does, and conflict within Central and Eastern Europe and the Middle East rages on until the mid-1920s, and there is a kind of a brief hiatus thereafter. So Robert Gerwaith writes, Russia's defeat was not the only cause for optimism among the Central Powers' military leadership in late 1917. Although, just before Christmas, the Ottoman Empire had lost the city of Jerusalem to British troops, Lenin's decision to withdraw Russia from the war allowed Constantinople's forces to retake control of all eastern Anatolia, and even encouraged military decision makers to revive their plans to invade the Caucasus. The Russian Revolution, one Turkish newspaper declared, has saved us from an immediate threat. As long as we do not forget the importance of events in Russia for us and follow them attentively, we can now take a deep breath. Although the United States has extended its April 1917 declaration of war on Germany to Austria-Hungary that December, no more than 175,000 American troops, many of them inexperienced, had arrived in Europe at this point. Instead, there was good reason to believe that the Central Powers now held the strategic initiative, at least until the Allied lines on the Western Front were replenished with American soldiers. Moreover, Russia's exit from the war had left another Allied power, Romania, isolated and surrounded by strong German, Austro-Hungarian and Bulgarian forces. On the 7th of December 1917, Bucharest accepted the new realities and signed the draconian armistice of Fuksani. So this, if you add into this also the events in Italy, then you have a complete picture of what you could argue is Allied crisis in late 1917, early 1918. Italy, along the Alpine foothills and the Isonzo River, had been waging war with the Austro-Hungarian Empire for 2 years. And in October 1917, at the 12th Battle of the Isonzo, the Battle of Caporetto, the Habsburg forces finally managed to land a major victory over Italy. The Austro-Hungarians had a fairly feeble war thus far. They had had immense difficulties invading Serbia, and only with German and Bulgarian help had they managed to defeat the Serbs. They had faced two major offensives from Russia, and the Austro-Hungarian forces had been dealt an enormous blow in 1916 as a result of the Brusilov offensive that swept through Galicia. The Austrians, supported by six German divisions, one of the officers, infantry officers there, was Rommel, in point of fact, who wrote many scathing things in his diaries about the fighting abilities of the Italians. They emerged from misty weather conditions and were supported by heavy artillery barrages, were able to break the lines on the 2nd Italian Army right away. And in one day, the shock troops of the German Army managed to advance 25 miles, a kind of almost unheard-of level of success for a First World War battle. And the overwhelming of the Italians cost 30,000 Italian soldiers killed or wounded, and 265,000 taken prisoner. The loathed and despised General Chief of Staff, Marshal Luigi Cadorna, who is, by all accounts, a sadist of epic proportions, was dismissed, and Prime Minister Paolo Baselli managed to lose his job as a result of the fighting. But overall, the Italian army didn't collapse in quite the way that the Germans and Austrians had hoped. But the hopes of the Italian government were that there would be a peace treaty that would not involve huge tranches of territory being passed to Austria. 1 year to the day before the end of the First World War, Erich Ludendorff, the quartermaster general of the German army, thought to himself optimistically that all of the fronts were now essentially defeated and there could only be one front left to fight, and that would be the showdown with the British and the French and the Americans. He wrote, "The situation in Russia and Italy will likely make it possible to strike a blow in the Western theatre of war in the new year. The balance of forces will be approximately equal. Around 35 divisions and 1,000 heavy artillery pieces can be made available for the offensive. Our overall situation demands we strike as early as possible, ideally in late March, late February or early March, before the Americans throw powerful forces into the balance. So even at that point, of jubilation, the German army realised that the clock was ticking. Another general staff officer, Colonel Albrecht von Thayer, said in his diary on New Year's Eve 1917, "Our position was really never so good. The military giant Russia is completely finished and pleads for peace, the same with Romania. Serbia and Montenegro have simply gone. Italy is supported with only difficulty by England and France, and we stand in its best province. England and France are still ready for battle, but are much exhausted, and the English are very much under pressure from U-boats." So, on the subject of exhaustion, the Germans were not blind to the fact that the Central Powers were approaching this too, and that speed was now of the essence. And it would be this speed of rushing through the Ludendorff offensives in the spring of 1918, which would eventually lead to a series of miscalculations and and gambles by Ludendorff and other senior German army commanders, which would present the Allies with an opportunity for final victory. War weariness and indiscipline were spreading through the armies of the Central Powers and the civilian populations of the Central Powers. After the failure of the Ludendorff offensive, it's telling how many German soldiers simply surrender when the 100 Days campaign begins and the British and French and American and other Allied armies sweep towards the German border. And I'll quote from Robert Gerwith again. "To be sure, the German high command was well aware that victory had to be attained swiftly. War weariness and indiscipline were spreading in all combatant nations, including the Central Powers. In late 1917 and early 1918, there were increasing signs of exhaustion and political dissent, culminating in the massive strikes in Vienna, Budapest and Berlin. At the same time, however, Germans were in the fortuitous position of being able to transfer 48 divisions from the east and field them against exhausted Allied soldiers on the Western Front. A misleading view of the war filtered into the capitals of the Central Powers, Berlin, Vienna, Budapest, Constantinople. And in all those instances, it was believed that the war was going to end very quickly, and there was one final push to come. What was not understood was the ability of the British, particularly, and the Americans, to replenish losses, to resupply with new men, new material, and new munitions. This sense of possibility and this belief in final victory boosted the morale of Central Power armies, German, Austro-Hungarian, Bulgarian, and Ottoman.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
But it was misleading. And when the reality that the war couldn't be quickly won and would have to wage on was visited upon many of these soldiers, it leads to a collapse in morale. What little morale there was left on any side needed to be carefully cultivated and nurtured. And when finally the spring offensive fails, the Ludendorff spring offensive fails, it leads to this kind of collapse in belief that the war can be won or it has any further point. Which is what made Ludendorff's spring offensive so risky. The defender, always in a war like the First World War, seemed to have the upper hand. The ability to dig trenches and fortify positions, to reinforce them with barbed wire, artillery and machine guns, meant that the attacker was always going to have a difficult time with things. Even though numerically things were presently on the Central Powers' side, how long that would last for in an offensive the size of that which Ludendorff had planned was an open question. So it was quite a gamble. But Hindenburg and Ludendorff knew that there really was no alternative. There was no other strategy than the kind of the manpower meat grinder approach. The troops that were eventually marched against Allied lines could potentially have been kept along the borders of the Reich or in defensive positions and cost the Allies huge numbers of casualties. But the clock is ticking. There was no more time for a long, drawn-out war. The war needed to be won quickly because of revolutionary tensions that were simmering away everywhere between Constantinople and Berlin. The ability of domestic populations to tolerate any more fighting was growing thin, and so it was really the home front which was determining the pace of events. The early victories in Ludendorff's spring offensive confirmed to the German High Command that everything that Ludendorff had suggested was correct. Everything seemed to be going to plan. On March 23rd, Wilhelm II, the Kaiser, convinced himself that the battle, and indeed the war, was won, and there was a widespread campaign along the throughout Germany to congratulate Hindenburg and Ludendorff and to pat them on the back. However, the reality was that despite the massive attack on the Allies that took them by surprise and bombarded them with one of the most heavy artillery barrages of the war, was that despite the advances that the German army had made, it was exhausting itself day by day. The lines were overstretched. There were 90,000 Allied surrenders and 1,300 pieces of artillery had been captured. But these were things that the Allies could replenish. The problem for the Germans is that the real attrition of the offensive cost 240,000 men. These were the remainder of these were mainly shock troops, storm troops, the remainder of the best units of the German army. This was the men who had been handpicked to storm enemy trenches and to overrun them. Well, this is an enormously costly job, and by the end of April, another 100,000 soldiers, British soldiers, had come across the Channel in order to replace the losses. But the German losses are largely irreplaceable. When Ludendorff realised that his objective on the Somme-Arras sector of the front had been missed, that he hadn't managed to kind of puncture through the line between the British and the French and separate the two, thus forcing the British back towards the Channel, he begins to search for other solutions and decides that he will have to probe other parts of the line and move and start with other offensives. Operation George was the next attack, where two German armies would attack nine Allied divisions, the eight British divisions and one Portuguese division, in fact, at Haysbrook, and this would hopefully sever Allied supply lines. The artillery barrage once again seemed to be successful, and the German army had advanced by 10 kilometres. But when the advance slowed down just a few kilometres from Haysbrook, the failure of George and the failure of Michael, Operations George and Michael, meant that the faith that the general staff began putting in Ludendorff's offensives started to diminish, and Ludendorff begins then desperately probing the Allied lines for anywhere where he can relaunch the offensive, which is now clearly stalled. One of the tragedies for Germany is a great many of the divisions that had been brought over from the Russian front, that had been freed up, had now been ground down by the attrition of the offensives. That said, by the end of May, the German army was within artillery shelling range of Paris, which they proceeded to do, killing 900 civilians. Ludendorff now found that he had created for himself immense problems. He had overstretched his supply lines, which were incredibly fragile during the last year of the First World War, and communications themselves were fragmented as well. Hunger was a huge factor for the German army. There are many reports of German soldiers who are hungry, perhaps not starving, but certainly malnourished and desperate to eat during the offensive, and when they overrun Allied trenches and discover tinned meat and bread and all these sorts of things, it's considered a luxury. So this might give us a clue as to what the German war economy and the kind of the food economy of Germany was able to do under the pressure of an Allied naval blockade. Towards the end of the Ludendorff offensive, the nightmare scenario for the German army began to occur. A quarter of a million American troops were landing in France every single month from April onwards. And on top of the losses that had been incurred by the German army, the exhausted and weakened German army was decimated by the Spanish flu. The Allied armies were hit by the Spanish flu as well, which killed 50 million people worldwide. But it seems to have had a much, much more profound effect on the German front line. In the German Sixth Army in Alsace, 10,000 new cases were reported every day during the first half of July. That is in one army alone. The British Army suffered 50,000 cases of influenza in June and July. So the British Army overall. Pneumonia, dysentery and malaria also ate away at the strength of the German Army. The weakening German troops, who had been decimated by the offensives and various illnesses, then had to face the brunt of Allied counterattacks. And as we know, these result in the 100 Days Offensive, which ends the First World War. So, the kind of the takeaway from this story is the consequences of that kind of strategic hubris at the from mid-1917 onwards. That belief that the war in Russia was over and therefore the war in the West could easily be won. But beyond that, the timetable for finishing the war as quickly as possible was something that all sides were keenly aware of because of the exhaustion on the home front and within various combatant armies. So incidences of mutiny and ill discipline were ever more pronounced. And so the First World War, I suppose you can argue, is a war of attrition on the battlefield, but it's a war of attrition between home fronts. Who is going to crack first? Who is going to take to the streets and build barricades and hope the army is going to come over to their side as a result of food shortages, war fatigue, inflation and other problems and the loss of loved ones? And the answer is the Central Powers believed it was more likely to happen with them. And they had seen Russia on what had happened there. They believed it was more likely to happen with them. And they acted first. They acted first to quickly end the war. Not to suggest that it couldn't or wouldn't or wasn't happening with Britain and France. Certainly some very intriguing tales towards the end of the war of mutinies and after the First World War, even police strikes in Great Britain. But the Central Powers on the home front crack first. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this and you found it useful. Please do check out our Facebook group. I'll put the link here in this podcast because there's a really, really good community of people who are into history and like a discussion emerging there. Anyway, I'll catch you on the next Explaining History podcast. Thanks, all the best, and bye-bye.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.